This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. I'm so glad you're here with me tonight for this show, because it's about Melody Buzzard. And most of you who have been following this channel or following our community on Twitter know that we have been on this from minute one, that we first heard about this mom who had been keeping Melody sort of sequestered from family, sequestered from her school, completely off the radar of individuals that would be around her in her community. Basically, it was unknown at one point, even when she first or had last even been seen. So let me just catch those of you up who don't know about this case. Essentially, this is where the boiling point hit. And that was back in August. And essentially, that's when the school started taking note of where is Melody. And so they started reaching out and they started calling in their concerns. The bottom line is, I think this really sparked Ashley, who is Melody's mother. I think this really sparked an already somebody on the edge to go much further. And we're going to see where she went. Essentially, Ashley Buzzard had a young child, Melody. And at 6 months old, Ashley lost her husband, Melody's father, in a horrible accident motorcycle wreck. I've seen so many things online saying these horrible things of what happened to him. It wasn't drugs. It wasn't issues. It wasn't anything like that. It was literally a horrible accident. Ever since that really sent Ashley into a spin. I want to show you a picture of Ashley Buzzard. This was several years ago, and let me see if I can get that off there so there's not all of that in the background. Okay, can't do it. Sorry, but this is a picture of Ashley Buzzard and Melody Buzzard. News Nation got this exclusively. Ashley Banfield has also been all over this case. And essentially, I want you to take note of what she looked like several years ago when Melody was much younger. Melody is 9 years old now. And this picture was back several years ago when she was quite younger. If you look at how she looks now, she looks quite different. I'm going to add this up to the stage. You can see a huge loss of weight, and we're going to bring even forward to even more weight loss than this. But I think it's important to understand that she lost her husband, and from that point on, she went into sort of a mental tailspin. And her mother, we know this from her mother, we know this from family, we know this from friends, because we're going to talk about one tonight. And we know now that Ashley Buzzard was in a very unwell mental situation. And this last call in where the school was now looking for Melody, I think pushed her over the edge. I want to add to this that back in 2000, there was an issue and Melody was taken away and lived with her uncle for a period of time. Ashley got her back. But again, things hadn't improved. As of only 2 years ago in 2023, when Ashley's mother went and visited, house was in squalor, no food, all sorts of issues. And the mother was very concerned. That would be the grandmother of Melody. But what happened back in October is what is critical. What happened back in October is Ashley took Melody on an odyssey of a trip. 3,000 plus miles to Nebraska and back. Important note, Melody didn't make it back. And so she went out again, 1,500 miles, and she did this all within 3 days. This is a near impossible situation to do, as I've touched on. It doesn't add up. 75 miles an hour, it would be a 20 hour trip just to go there. So, I mean, you have to sleep, you have to eat, you have to get gas. It's almost impossible to do this. And so it's very concerning how she, that sort of exhaustion and fatigue of driving like that, if that might have added to her decision-making on that trip to return without Melody. Now, that sort of catches us up, I think, everybody who might not know this case, just so you're caught up on where things stand. Prior to this breaking news, and we've got a lot of breaking news today. I'm so excited we have some new news on this case. Again, Melody has been considered missing, the bureaus involved, local law enforcement involved, and there was a huge break in the case when Ashley was arrested. And Ashley was literally just arrested. And I want to see if I have that arrest photo here. I do not have her arrest photo here. I've showed it before. It's certainly on my Twitter. But essentially, she's taken into custody. And it's important to understand why she's taken into custody. She's taken into custody on charges that essentially she would not let an individual who she knew leave her home. Now, let me give you the details. The individual involved, his name is Tyler Brewer. So essentially he comes over to the house, they're talking, and all of a sudden Ashley becomes even more incoherent than she had previously been around him. Now, she's known him since 2014. They've known each other, Tyler Brewer, again, a friend. But what happened is he said she's done a total transformation, not only in body size, as sort of everybody can see here, according to Ashley's mother. She doesn't even recognize Ashley now because Ashley is so small and so slight. She doesn't look anything like she used to look. And she's actually smaller than this now. Let me show you this picture of her getting a package. Look at how small of build she is. And this is the same build. This is right before the arrest. This is the same build she had before the arrest. So please compare these two. It's just really amazing. Can I get them both on stage? I don't think I can get them both on stage. I'm sorry. But this was her several years ago. And then this is her now. And interestingly, when law enforcement came to arrest her again on this charge, basically imprisoning somebody, and just to give you the details on that, it was her own friend, Tyler Brewer, who came to the house and essentially engaged her in conversation. Purportedly, according to Tyler, Ashley told Tyler what she did with Melody. And this is amazing. She told her, she told him, I'm so excited about this case, this break, so to speak, about what she did with Melody. But this is the problem I see. Can it even be believed? He's not sharing it. He's not sharing it. But can she even be believed? Even by his own recollection of everything that happened that resulted in these criminal charges and her being arrested. This all happened, and he went to police. It happened on November 6th, this incident, and she was willing to tell him what she had done with Melody and that she dropped him off at a particular location, dropped her off. I can tell you this. I am praying, and I hope everybody else is, that we could possibly have a wonderful ending to this story, because I quite frankly am very concerned because of her mental state. And he well said she became violent. She locked four locks on that door. She was not going to let him leave. She ended up letting him leave. He was able to get out. He immediately went to authorities. Again, this is a friend of her named Tyler Brewer. And this is brought to us by News Nation, who has done an amazing job covering this, where a lot of the other networks haven't covered it or haven't covered it very thoroughly. It's just like really the Gabby Petito case that News Nation is all over. I tell you, once they get a bite of a case, they just do such a great job bringing a lot of updates. And this was Nancy Liu, who's a reporter I've worked closely with on other cases as well. And she really dug and got the name of the individual. And she spoke to the individual. I mean, Tyler Brewer was the one, this is firsthand knowledge, that told Nancy Liu what happened, the details. Now, he didn't want to go into details about what she had told him in terms of the location of Melody. Thank goodness. I mean, we're talking about somebody with some morals and some scruples, because he didn't want that. He doesn't want this case to be messed up. And so we don't know about that. And I don't know how much more he's going to come forward. I may try to interview him on this channel. But essentially, there you have it. That's what happened. That's why she was charged with false imprisonment. A lot of people are trying to say, oh, no, it was something that happened related to the case. It really wasn't related to the case per se. In other words, it wasn't Melody. It wasn't, you know, anything that she did with Melody. Rather, it was something she did with a friend of hers in discussions about Melody. And anyway, she became irrational and violent and locked him in. He got out, went to authorities. That's what that false imprisonment charge is. So that's big and really important and breaking. Now, remember, she's being held on a $100,000 bond. I got to tell you, it's a pretty decent bond. Again, she only has to come up with $10,000. But my question is, who is going to, what bondsman with her history is going to loan her that money? Now, let's get into, and I'm so sorry about that background. I had that background on for something else, and I need to get rid of it because I know it can be a little bit distracting. So apologies. But this is the route she took back from going to Nebraska. And again, if you're going to Nebraska, you're not going to take this route, but it gets more interesting than this. She diverted off of I-70 and actually diverted on rural route 89 to go back home. This is a very off the beaten path route. It's a route. This is the desolation and the situation that is out there. This is where you want to go if you don't want to be found. And she took that circuitous route. I think the same reason she wore wigs, the same reason that she put her daughter Melody in a wig, as we can see here, and so forth. But I want to get into even more breaking news on this case. And this has to do with a wonderful private investigator who is on the case. Now, this guy I want to give a lot of kudos to. This guy is not out to make a name for himself. He's not out, you know, trying to be the man on ABC or anything else. This guy isn't dangling important investigative details out. This guy isn't about him. This guy is truly about the case. And you know what? He's working for free. He's working pro bono. He's a missing persons investigator. And, you know, I always say, if you're going to get an investigator, please get somebody with extensive law enforcement background, because they've done so much in their law enforcement careers. They've made those errors. They know the tricks. They are typically dialed in with law enforcement. They still have friends in law enforcement circles, so they can get answers and they can communicate much better with law enforcement, which you have to be able to do if you're a private investigator, or any sort of law enforcement background. But this guy, I think, is the real deal. He's been doing this sort of work for about 30 years, from what I can glean. His name is Bill Garcia. And he's working for the paternal side of the family, and he's doing it for free. He's doing it out of the goodness of his heart. And he's done other cases like this. He really cares. This is pretty much his first stop. He went here. Why did he go here? Some of you may have seen this, but there's actually a woman witness that remembers Melody and, well, I shouldn't say Melody. She remembers Ashley coming through. Now, if you're wondering where this area is called Grand Junction. I want to make sure I get the name right. Utah, Grand Junction, Utah. That's where this Phillips 66 is. So essentially, he goes there because there was somebody that remembered them. Now, why would you remember these, you know, women going through? Well, first of all, this is so desolate out here. Remember, and I know some of you all are too, but I'm a Midwest, Kansas, Nebraska girl. This is how a lot of the country looks over there. So in any event, they stuck out. Why? Those wigs. And somebody had on a purple-haired wig, according to this witness. Now, she particularly remembers them because apparently at this Phillips 66, there's some stray cats around there. And I guess Ashley engage them with conversation about these cats. And so it stuck out to this woman, that and particularly the purple hair. So that is all very important, I think. Now, this was the odd thing that, and this is all information from Bill Garcia, the investigator. Bill Garcia says that according to this woman, and I'm sorry, it's not Bill Garcia, it's actually the witness that says this. The witness specifically says that the purple-haired woman, she thought to be in her 20s and 30s. Now, this is where it gets concerning because Ashley looked like Ashley. She identified Ashley, right? She has that huge, big hair wig on. I can only have 10 photos, but we've seen it all. We've seen her at the rental car company. We saw her on the arrest. We saw her on the day of the search warrant with this big haired wig, if you can see my cursor. And so she was identifiable, but she said that there was a lady with purple hair. I mean, could this have been Melody? Remember, they were seated in a car. She saw her seated in a car, so it's not like she saw her up. She's in this disguise. If the disguise is like this, I've heard a lot of people say, oh my gosh, this can't be a 9-year-old. Look at how she looks. And from this angle and everything, obviously, Melody looks much older than 9, just the way there's a purse, you know, her face is obscured. She looks tall from the angle of the camera. But I assure you, according to law enforcement, and I believe them, they're trying to find Melody. This is Melody. And so for this woman to say that the purple wigged girl or woman was 20 to 30, that's where the story gets confusing. But I can tell you, eyewitness statements so often are really, really confusing. They do not necessarily represent the actual truth that they saw, not because they're not being truthful, but because they see things at a distance. It's been a while. Their line of vision is a little obscure, all of that. So for that reason, I really wonder if at this gas station, everybody, Melody was actually seen in a purple wig. Now, the other possibility, of course, is that Melody wasn't there or Melody wasn't able to be seen. Either she was laying down or this witness, her angle didn't show her in there, and that there's another accomplice or another woman. But I got to tell you, I just don't think that's the case. I really think who she saw in that car was likely Melody, you know, in this wig, in this disguise, in a car, obstructed from her view, sitting, so it's hard to tell height, and it, you know, not up close through a windshield, and she's off on the age. That's what I hope, because I do think this woman probably spotted them. The wigs are a getaway, and this whole conversation about the cats, it seems as if she would remember somebody. So I don't think the witness is coming forward for any sort of fame or anything like that. I think she is trying to be absolutely real with what she saw. Now, I want to go through what Bill Garcia also saw. He had been staking out the house where I know I just want to get another picture of this house up here, where Melody and Ashley have been living. Okay. And at this house, he saw some very interesting things. First of all, Ashley doesn't have a car. So when she wants to commute, she does ride shares, or she rents cars, obviously, but she does ride shares. So that gives a lot more answers to us. She didn't have a car that she could have driven cross country. So that answers for us one question, which was why she rented a car. So remember, we wondered, did she just do that to, again, put a layer between her and her actions of this rental car company, which we see a lot of people who do bad things do. They rent cars and they think somehow that will obscure enough, add a layer, which it never does because there's all those records. But nevertheless, we have this answer now. According to him, and again, he did surveillance on her house for several days and on Ashley. She was in and out a lot. She also kept her garage door open a lot, even overnight. And look at what he saw. And this is just one picture. There's five or six pictures. I just am showing you one. But I don't know what you all think, but when I looked at this and the investigator had the same summation, this seems like somebody in the throes of moving. Now, it could also be somebody that is just messy and they throw everything in the garage, and that's a possibility too. But it just looks like somebody packing up their things, just having it all there. I don't know. That's what I'm seeing here. And then also, as you can see here, accepting deliveries. Again, here's more boxes. It just looks like she was moving. So I find that very interesting. Miranda, I just looked down and saw this. Yes. And actually, I wish I was able, without taking time and going and downloading. I have all this downloaded on my computer, but then I have to download it over here to StreamYard. There are many pictures and they're all like this. They're moving. It's just different angles in this garage. And again, this was taken by this PI, Bill Garcia. And all of this, I think, is very important and critical, but it gets more interesting, way more interesting, according to Mr. Garcia. So he stakes out the place for quite a number of days. And then he notices that for 3 days in a row, Ashley is not exiting. She's not exiting her house. And he becomes concerned. What is going on? All of this was going on. She was kind of going in and out. He said she got up actually one morning at 5 a.m. She was already gone, off doing whatever she was doing and then coming back. And so she's a very early riser, erratic hours, garage door open throughout the night. Does anybody do that on purpose? I'm thinking this is a woman that is so mentally struggling and, that she is not thinking straight. And let me tell you why I'm going to say that, beyond what her mom says, what relatives say, and what that friend Tyler said. The investigator concerned about her, and this is good work, he puts together a care package for her, along with a little note, a care package of sundries, food and other things. And he leaves a note and he wants to make contact with her because he's, I think, in some sense worried about her. But again, he's working for the paternal side of the family for free, again, pro bono, wonderful missing person investigators, Gator, so much admiration for guys that do this, that do it for the right reasons. Anyway, he puts together this care package, doesn't hear from her. So he does what a good investigator will do. And he goes to the door and he ends up making contact with her and they have a conversation. Now, this is key. He says she is absolutely delirious. I think he used the word delirious, talking deliriously. Oh, he says, no, this is the exact words he says. She's incoherent and then later becomes non-responsive. So imagine they are up there having a conversation and you're speaking with somebody incoherent and non-responsive. And I don't know how many of you have had interactions with people like this, interactions with people who have a serious mental episodes that are going on. In the FBI, we had to work what we call be the duty intake agent. And we did it in a rotation. So if you were in a big office, like I was in Houston, we had about 300 agents in Houston. So that was great. I only had to do it about once a year. But when I was in Dallas, I was in a big office, but I was in the Fort Worth resident agency. So that's a small office. So in any event, my point is you get to deal with these people that come off the street all the time. I've had people show me how, you know, the government is invading their brain by their, you know, hardware, their fillings. People show me that their fillings, they pulled them out. I have had a guy, I'm going to try to imitate this, and it's really not funny. It's so sad. But just go like, it was unbelievable. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make fun. It's just, I would be talking to him and then he'd just start convulsing. But it wasn't a seizure. It would just be, you know, some sort of convulsive behavior. And then he would try to talk again and became incoherent. There was nothing. I've had people come in and say that they're dead people. People come in and say that they're famous people. It's unbelievable what people really think. And then I've shared before personal experiences with people I've known for more than 30 years that are friends, and I'll call them both friends, that have these issues. And when they lose touch with reality, and it's a beautiful mind situation, it is like, it's unbelievable what they think and the people they think that are after them. And typically it's a proximal event. In both situations that I know very personally, and in other situations I know from work, not only being on the duty agent, those are just some of the more acute when you have lines of them coming in. Those are more acute situations. But in the cases that I know are the long-term illnesses, it's really, really something to see. And then also on cases that I've had where the individuals are including, and specifically most often in parental kidnapping cases. But proximal event, I think in this case of Ashley Buzzard, was when her husband died, leaving her with a 6-month-old. I mean, I just believe this, and I've said it really from the very beginning when I first got involved in this case. We are expecting Ashley Buzzard to act in a normal manner, to be able to logically understand what she's doing. You know, why did she go to Nebraska? Why did she come back through Kansas? Why is she taking this very covert route? Oh my gosh, because she is having a break. She's involved, I believe, in a serious mental break. Now that she's behind bars in a jail facility, hopefully they can get her appropriately medicated. I'll tell you what, if you're not in jail, there's nothing family members can do. You can't take people and put them in a paddy wagon unless you can prove that they are a danger to themselves or others. And many of these people aren't. Please go online and you have to look up these people. It's very interesting. And I don't mean to say these people in a derogatory way. I'm just saying there are groups of people and they all interact with each other. They all feed off of each other, that the government is after them. One of them, the Chinese government, was after that individual. And they, but they all talk amongst each other. They talk about putting tinfoil up. They talk about their feelings. They talk about what is happening to them. They compare notes. They talk about how angry they are that their family won't believe them, that their friends don't believe them. It is real to them. And I really believe that that is the situation we have. So if that is the situation and Ashley Buzzard took that drive, that very, very difficult long drive that most, you know, long haul guys can't take. If she did that and then veered off and remember, didn't return home with her, it's a possibility she may not even remember exactly what she did. But I think the good news is we know now there's information that there is family that is in Utah along this route. Generally speaking, I'm not saying like right off the road. I'm just saying generally speaking in this part of Utah. And I think that's also a good sign. So far we have Tyler, the friend who she falsely imprisoned, that has said she has, you know, lost it, and that he or she told Tyler where she left Melody. This is such great news. Now, again, she's not in her right mind, so we have to take it, you know, cautiously, but at least there's some hope there. You combine that with the fact that there are relatives that live in that part of the country. You combine that with the fact that a independent person at this Phillips 66 saw at least Ashley and maybe Melody in a purple wig, but just thought she was older than she was. I mean, there is a lot of real hope. And this investigator is out driving this route and out searching along this route. And one of the biggest things he's doing is he is literally taking flyers, this flyer, and letting people know this little girl is missing. I mean, they're going to stick out. It's so interesting that all the things she did, like, let me give you another example. Ashley, and I know some of you might know this, but she changed license plates on the way home. That's what law enforcement has told us. Now, did she change it on the way out too? Law enforcement hasn't told us this, but we know she changed it on the way home to this New York license plate. That's going to really make her stick out in the middle of Beaufunk, which is where she's at. Let me show you where she was seen at. Okay, this is in the middle of nowhere. Let's take a look at this. She's in the middle of nowhere. When I say the middle of nowhere, this is a desolate road. This isn't a major highway. This is a rural route 89. And so it's funny, all the things she did to sort of be more circuitous really only made her stick out. A wig, a purple wig, changing license plate to a New York license plate, which people are going to notice that more in that part of the country. They're going to be like, why were you in, you know, a New York plate? That will stick out way more than a California or Utah or other plate. New York is going to stick out. And then, of course, as I mentioned, those wigs. Again, this is the route she took. So all these things she did to be circuitous, I think, may help pinpoint for law enforcement and for everybody exactly when she might have been last seen. A purple wig, everyone? Move. In that part of the country, people don't wear purple wigs. All right. Or not many people with New York plates run around in wigs. Okay. So we talked about the ride shares. We've talked about the few visitors that people don't come and go. We talked about the fact that this investigator says this is clearly a mental illness situation going on. Again, incoherent, non-responsive. Those are verbatim adjectives he used to describe her. Let's see. But she did open the door and agree to talk to him. And so I think, you know, now we have some real inside information. Again, this was before she's taken into custody. We also know when she was taken into custody that law enforcement took other things out of there, particularly in paper bags. I got to be honest, I hate when I see paper bags. I want to see things in plastic bags because plastic bags mean non-biodegradable. When I see paper bags, I think biodegradable. I think of fluids. I think of skin. I think of blood. I think of all the other things. It could be they just use paper bags. But I can tell you in the Bureau, when you took things that, you know, were non-biodegradable, we use plastic bags. But, you know, again, this is local law enforcement assisting. They're both assisting. Really, the Bureau is assisting local law enforcement. Local law enforcement is the lead, and local law enforcement was the one that charged this imprisonment, this false imprisonment charge of Ashley's friend since 2014, right? They go way back. And he also discussed this complete break, if you will. All right. Want to talk about a couple of other things he says. Let's see. I want to make sure I got everything in here. Oh, this was so interesting. So apparently, Ashley, and I'm going to get this article, but apparently Ashley had some serious issues of her own at the age of 9. Is there a direct correlation? Maybe, especially with somebody who is not thinking correctly. Something like that, that age of 9 could really be significant for her. I still believe this more has to do with the school, you know, possibly her paranoia that the school's coming after her and that, people are coming to take Melody away, and that she has found somebody there possibly. But let me tell you why I struggle with the optimism, even though we do have some optimism now. I struggle with it. And let me tell you why. If she would have gone to Nebraska and we wouldn't have seen Melody again after Nebraska, I would feel so much better that Melody could be alive, because then we could surmise that she took her there possibly to meet somebody or to hand her off to somebody, something she had arranged. Either, again, remember, people that are struggling in this way, if that is what's happening, this beautiful not mine scenario, they all communicate with one another, not all of them, but many of them. And they're each other's support network because their families typically don't support them. They think that they're crazy. And because they're not a danger to themselves or the public, the family can't really do anything. They can't force pills down them. They can't, you know, inject them with the medication they need. And plus, those are long-term medications like lithium to get things under control. So they have this network that they have. And so I, from the beginning, had been wondering, is this somebody online that she knows and she came to trust because they're in this beautiful mind network, and she dropped her off? So I would have felt better about things in Nebraska. But again, maybe something didn't go right there. She changed her mind again. Remember also, and it's terrible to see, but there's a lot of hallucinations / things that you think are real, people that are after you, places you think you're going, and you get there and it's not even the house you thought you were going to be at. It's a lot of issues. And judging from what most recently this private investigator said, he also described her as very paranoid. I mean, we know that, right? But it's just good to hear somebody with a credentials of a PI that's dealt with a lot of people and a lot of missing cases assess her that way as well. Paranoid, delusional, you know, not in reality. And this, I think, is going to be a huge issue for law enforcement, because it might be very difficult for them, even if they get her medicated, to discern what she did that was in her delusion and what she did that was in reality. So anyway, she leaves Nebraska. Again, we know, according to law enforcement, that she was on the Colorado side of Colorado and Utah. That's the last known sighting. And again, that was on the 9th of October. She left on the 7th of October. And on the 9th of October, she still had 800 miles to go. I mean, that's a huge drive, 800 miles, hours, 12-hour drive approximately. And you have to stop and everything else. So it's a long drive still. But at least 8 hours out, law enforcement confirmed she was seen. I guarantee you, law enforcement is boots on the ground, FBI, all these offices sending out AO leads, going to all these places on this highway and trying to figure out when's the last time somebody saw her. I think this 66 sighting, I really believe it was likely her. But what happened after that? This, again, is in Grand Junction, Utah. What happened after that witness? When is she seen again? Is she the purple-haired, wigged girl that was in the car that wasn't described as a girl, that was described as a 20 or 30-year-old, according to the witness? You know, there's just so many questions still. But I think, you know, there's some hope now. The fact, though, that she turned around and came back home without her, where would she have left her? Maybe with a relative. That relative likely would have reached out to somebody by now and said, Melody's here. I just don't think that that's what happened. I think the best case scenario is she is hooked in, and law enforcement will be able to figure this out. They have her electronics. She was hooked in with a group online, and that this is best case scenario. And that group online, a person she came to trust and dropped Melody with that person someplace between that Colorado-Utah border and home. Or she dropped her off somewhere much closer to home that law enforcement hasn't been able to discern. Wouldn't that be interesting? Remember, according to, this was actually an article I read in the Daily Mail, if you guys want to look it up, but they had surveillance crews out on her, and she went to a rental car company. I believe it was two rental car companies. She just couldn't rent the car. Where was she going? I think she was going to where she dropped Melody or where she buried Melody. If Melody is alive, she was going to where Melody is. So there's a lot of hope in this, but I'll say some hope. It's hard to believe Melody would be alive and not one person has said anything. But again, if it was in this sort of subculture of people struggling that are thinking the government's trying to kill them and the Chinese people are trying to kill them and all these other scenarios I've heard, it is possible that she gained trust with somebody and that that's where she could be. All right. I think that is all the updates I have. The big one, Tyler Brewer, that's the false imprisonment. This really doesn't have anything to do with her other than Ashley told Tyler where she left Melody. We don't know if it's true or not. We just know that a story was given. Again, Bill Garcia working for the family, working pro bono, not a publicity hound, but rather somebody giving of his time and effort pro bono to try to help this family out. All right, everybody. I really appreciate y'all being here and coming on tonight to be with us. I know I keep promising every day I'm going to do a 5 o'clock show. Every day I'm going to, or I don't know if I promise, but I say I'm going to try. And it's just going to be tough. I've realized I'm not going to make any of these promises. My husband always says, Jen, you need to say what you're going to do at a low bar and deliver at the high bar. And so I need to start doing that. So at the low bar once a week, that way when I come and do three shows, it'll be like, yes, I did three shows. So this case is really important to me though. And I really appreciate you all being here. If you liked what you saw, please subscribe, please like, if you want to be part of the membership family. I think it's all of 99 cents a month, $1.99 a month. Anyway, I would love to have any of you join as members, and hoping as time goes on and we continue to grow to really do some special things. But in the meantime, focusing on Sebastian Rogers, focusing on Melody, focusing on injustices that occur. Hopefully, I'm hoping against all hope, Tim Tebow met with him. I'm hoping that he comes on the show and talks about what he's doing around the world for children that are being sexually exploited and sexually trafficked. His safe homes, he's got about 50 right now. It's working on a couple of more. He's just doing so many amazing things. I'm hoping to teach self-defense at those homes pro bono to the staff and to these young women. So working on a lot of that behind the scenes besides my real job. But I really appreciate y'all being here. And until next time. Oh, and to my mods, I never thank them enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys are the best. And all of you here, thank you. Until next time. May justice be served for Melody Buzzard.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.